So actually, we were practicing a little bit of there will be mindfulness while sitting. And just to explain few more aspects into this practice. So there are five ways that Buddha mentioned that if you want to have the proper understanding, the correct understanding, Buddha recommends us to support this practice in five ways. Number one is the Suttame Jnana or Sutta Anugrahita, where sometimes we have to listen to Dhamma, we have to read a book. So there are, actually we are learning about Buddha's teaching. So that is one aspect. That is also necessary because we need fair amount of convincing power which is coming through this knowledge, coming through the Buddha's teaching, coming through learning, listening. So all these things are actually contributing towards some level of understanding. So that is one aspect. Then Buddha says we need to maintain a good moral life. So that is where the Sila Anugrahita, where we are not harming ourselves and not harming others. So basic morality we have to have. So actually with the development of mindfulness, this moral aspects more and more get refined, because we become fairly sensitive, we become very awake. Therefore, we can recognize easily when we are going to do something wrong. If it is something harmful to ourselves, we can easily understand that. If what we are going to tell is harmful to the others, then we can understand that. So likewise, this maintaining a good behavior, very virtuous, being moral, is something that we have to cultivate, and that too will support to have the proper understanding, correct understanding, samadhi. And then Buddha says, we have to discuss. When we are going through this path, we individually have to practice. It is true that there are many people, the core practitioners are there, but the path that I am going through, the experience that I am going through is very unique to myself. There may be similarities, as I said in the sitting session, but I have to go through it individually. So, therefore, sometimes we need to share this all experience. So what I have experienced, is it only unique to me or is it a common thing? So if I can share that text again, we can recognize, we can understand. So these are very common human characteristics. These are fairly common characteristics. So we, in a way, get connected as a mindful family, as all human beings, as living beings. So we can connect well when we discuss, particularly about our practice. And again, if there are any doubts related to the practice, related to the teaching, so still those also can be discussed and any doubts can be eradicated, eliminated, can be cleared. Because when we are well convinced, when the doubts are clear, then we can confidently continue our practice. So therefore Buddha recommends to have time to time Dhamma discussions so that we can remove our doubts and go through further practice confidently. And then Buddha recommends to collect the mind, because typically the minds are scattered. We are being driven to the past experience, various past memories. So those are very interesting, very fascinating. Therefore, always there's a tendency that we get being dragged towards the past. And again, there's a tendency to imagine about the future, what's going to happen in the future, how uncertain will be the future, what would be the plans, all these different aspects we can think, and it's very interesting. And therefore, we are always drifting from the present moment and always lingering in the past or future. So therefore, we need to collect the mind. We have to come back to the present moment, collect the whole dispersed awareness, scattered awareness, and come back to ourselves. So that becomes another aspect. So Buddha encourages us to have this support as well. So rather than having a scattered mind, we need to have a well-collected mind. So this well-collected mind is so powerful. Very much like you are focusing or collecting the sun rays using a convex lens and then getting a lot of energy. If it is scattered, you can't do anything. But once it is collected, then it is so powerful. Similarly, the mind, when it is scattered, it is not that strong. But when it is well collected, well tranquil, then it is fairly powerful. So this is another aspect that Buddha asks us to support. Time to time, we have to collect the mind, concentrate the mind. And we can't stop there. So we have to use this concentrated mind, well-collected mind, tranquil mind, to understand about ourselves, understand this real experience, understand this whole domain of experience. And that actually leads us towards a wisdom. That is the vipassana practice, where we are doing some observation. The collected mind is used to observe various phenomena. And that continuous observation, impartial observation, non-judgmental observation, help us to have direct knowledge, help us to have direct understanding. It is not a book knowledge. It is not someone else's knowledge. It is not something copied, borrowed knowledge. Rather, it is our own experiential knowledge. So this is something encouraging. So that is the other support Buddha asking us to have as a support. So if one can time to time support one's practice in these five ways, Buddha says that he will be able to purify his mind. He will be able to have a direct understanding, correct view. And therefore, he would be able to get free. So if we want to get free, if you are sort of looking forward to some sort of freedom from suffering, from unsatisfaction, or in the long run, in the whole samsara, then this is something that we have to support. All these five ways are very interesting and very important. So we can't say one is higher than the other. All five are quite important. So time to time, therefore, we have to listen to Dhamma, read a book, so that way we can support. And another time, we have to strengthen our morality. We have to understand whether I am a virtuous person. So we have to strengthen that moral aspect. And another time, we have to discuss with the teacher or discuss with our co-practitioners so that we can share our experience, so that we can clarify the doubts. And again, time to time, we have to collect the mind, concentrate the mind, so that we are well focused. And once the mind is well focused, that focused mind can be used to further analyze the present experience, further understand, investigate the present experience. So that will lead to deeper realizations. That will lead to deeper insights. Those are actually eye-opening. Those actually tell us, convince us further and further. It is worth practicing. So the effort that we are being used actually being rewarded with these insights. And you can, if such a powerful insight occurs to oneself, then he will understand it may be 1,000 times worthy than the effort that I have put forth. Because such a eye-opening insights can happen through the practice. So therefore, these 5 ways we can utilize time to time to support the practice. And again, as I said, discussion is another aspect. So this discussion, we have to do honestly. It is not to impress others, or it is not to show off, rather to connect with the others, to connect with the other co-practitioners, to connect with the teacher, just to communicate our own experience. So this way we can have a dialogue, we can have a good communication. So that will further encourage our practice, that will further clarify the path and develops fair amount of confidence about what we are trying to do. So therefore, I encourage you to discuss what you have done, what we have experienced today. And this is the time, the opportunity. There are, I think, about 22 participants today. So if someone likes to explain one's own experience, that we have about 20 to 25 minutes of sitting session. So if you like to share your experience, so that probably we can discuss based upon that someone else's experience.
So I'll just say, if you want to sort of communicate your experience, you can raise your hand, or you can send a chat message. And I'll also put a link in the chat if you do, I want to do it a bit anonymously, I guess.
Maybe, Avsarai Bhante, I will start with what I have felt when I was doing the mindful sitting posture. What I want to know is, when I was mindful on my posture, I felt really calm and quiet. I felt my mind coming into my body. And then I was focusing on the tightness and then the roughness and the weight of my body on my buttocks like that. And slowly, I was mindful on my hands touching together. After some time, like 10 minutes, I couldn't feel exactly how my fingers are touching. Earlier, I could clearly feel them and I could feel the outline. But after some time, it all started together, just a touch. So why is this happening, Bhante? I couldn't outline my fingers separately after about 10 minutes, but I was keeping mindfulness on whatever I was feeling on my touch.
Yeah. So actually, at the beginning, so once we establish mindfulness, we are able to distinctly recognize one by one. Say, for example, if you are now trying to recognize each and every touching sensation, say your left arm is resting on your right arm. So then you can feel some amount of heaviness, some kind of weight on the below arm, below hand. So that is possible. And again, probably you can feel which finger is more heavy, which finger is touching on which area. So you can recognize, you can actually mentally scrutinize the whole picture, and you can recognize how the whole orientation of the arm. So what are the fingers which are touching and which one is giving the more thrust, more pressure, and you can have a sort of a picture about this whole scenario. But as you continue the practice, so these boundaries can become blurred. So on such situation, it is not necessary to effortfully find this blurred information, but rather more and more, the mindfulness has to be refined without even giving a name, without even trying to find out the location. Say, for example, there could be a situation, once the mind is well collected, then you can't recognize there is some sensation, whether is it really happening on these hands or whether they are happening on the foot, or whether is it a sensation happening on the tummy, or whether is it happening on the head. So likewise, you can't distinguish. So this is possible. Actually, at that time, it is not required to distinguish. Rather, we simply have to use this most prominent experience to further and further understand the whole situation, the whole story. Now, everything else has disappeared, and maybe just one experience has come forward, has become more prominent. And now we are closely observing these characteristics, closely observing this prominent experience and how it is behaving. What is the real behavior of it? Is it constantly maintaining its intensity?
Seems like there's a disturbance. Let's wait a few minutes. I think once you come back online.
I got disconnected and again reconnected. Hope you all can hear me.
Am I silent? Oh, yes, we can. Yeah, hear.
All of a sudden, I got disconnected. There seems to be some disturbances today, and I heard some monsoon situation is there in below the India. So I think could be some disturbance are going on. Anyway, so what I was telling is that when we are experiencing that kind of a common characteristics, then we don't need to go back and sort of trying to recognize whether this is really happening on hands or on the tummy or on the head or on the soles. So likewise, we don't need to go. Rather, we can recognize this most prominent characteristics, most prominent experience, and we further can understand how it is evolving, how it is changing. So therefore, what Suranga said is very common in the practice, where we start with recognizing various distinct characteristics, unique characteristics, individual characteristics. But as we grow, as our mindfulness evolve, so this various distinct features, distinct characteristics starts to dissolve, starts to blur, and something common can come forward. And this common characteristics now becomes our field of awareness. This characteristics become our focused place. And we don't need to give even a name. And we simply have to maintain a very quiet mind, silent mind, and again, continuously investigate how this experience is felt, how it is behaving, how it is changing, how it is arising, how it is passing away. Is it just a one single object, one single experience, or it is also a collection of experiences which appeared like a single experience, but if we closely scrutinize, probably we can recognize it is not just a single experience, it's also a collection of experiences. Very subtle collection of experiences ultimately appear like a single experience. Yeah. Anyone else like to share their experience?
Trying to answer, if I may ask a question.
Yeah.
So when we start the practice, initially, when you're settling down, there is, in the guide, you say, like, so we calm ourselves down and, you know, make sure that no, your hands and feet are not stressed or there. So we just relax everything. Yeah. But after a while, you again start realizing that there is some, that because you're going to focus on your breathing or like one point or keeping your focus on one place. Yeah. Then when you go, after a little bit, you again feel that, oh, my hands are, you know, too tight because I'm putting so much energy to focus on one spot. And then I feel that even though I started off as with a relaxed body, after a bit, the effort I put into focusing on the breathing or my stomach rise and falling has made some other place stressed. And I can see that there's tension in some place because you're putting so much effort. Like when you do in normal activities, you know, even if you're writing or something like that, you put an effort. After a while, the places that I thought, or I started off as a relaxed body, is now suddenly gone back to being stressed again. So is that part of, is it part of the practice, or is it that I'm putting too much effort into doing this?
So actually it is very normal, because as I said, I mean, this whole body is subject to various causes and conditions. So when we start, it is in one sort of a condition, but as we move forward, the whole thing can change. But when we are starting, of course, we are keeping everything in a very comfortable position. So that we can carry forward, but slowly, slowly, based on the situation, the body can change, the experience can change. I mean, that's why, I mean, depending on how seasoned the body is for this practice, so it can either support or it can even become an obstacle. Say, for example, if one is a beginner, so he can't maintain the posture maybe even 10 minutes. After 10 minutes, there may be various painful feelings. But as one practices more and more, then he can maintain very comfortable posture maybe for 15 minutes. After 15 minutes, there may be various painful feelings. Then he may have to change the posture. But if he continues his practice, maybe another 20 minutes, now he can maintain a very comfortable posture. Maybe 30 minutes, he can maintain a comfortable posture. So likewise, this body can be seasoned. This body, the posture can be seasoned so that you can maintain a very tranquil, very relaxed, comfortable posture for quite a long time. So it depends on the practice, depends on how often you are practicing. So if you are constantly practicing, daily practicing, and you're sitting, orientation is very similar. Suppose you are sitting always cross-legged. Today also you do that practice. In the morning you do the same way. In the evening also you do like that. And tomorrow also you do the same way. So likewise, the body get habituated. The body get seasoned to that sort of a posture. So likewise, this... the bodily support is something that we can anticipate as we continue our practice. At the beginning, body might not support at all because we are not used to stay at one position. We used to struggle. We used to go here and there. So being just sitting and closing eyes and being cross-legged, appears like something artificial, it appears like abnormal. But as we continue our practice, so we slowly, the body will understand, we can sit comfortably. I can sort of relax while sitting. I can come back to this body. So this sitting posture is something beautiful. So rather than jumping, rather than running here and there, just sitting is something that we can start to appreciate. So therefore, how we start and how the feelings going to evolve, therefore has some connection with our practice, how long we have practiced, how long we have seasoned the body. And on the other hand, so within even for a seasoned practitioner, all these sensations, so what is happening in the body is not in our control. It's beyond our control. So that is what we are trying to understand. Even we are given the most conducive environment, still the body may go through various difficult situations. Body may go through various painful feelings. And at the same time, sometimes very happy, pleasurable feelings as well. You don't need to constantly say that it is painful feelings, but sometimes the whole meditation becomes very blissful. So we appear like floating, we can't even feel the body, the mind becomes very relaxed. So a lot of joy generating. So likewise, a lot of pleasurable feelings as well. But all these things are coming and going. You can't think that yesterday I had this kind of feeling. I definitely may have that kind of similar experience today. So you can't tell like that. So everything happens due to various causes and conditions. So therefore everything change. So acknowledging that change, be ready to that change, is kind of an open mind. So that is the kind of an open mind that we have in this mindful practice.
Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah. Bhante, so we haven't received any more experiences from current participants, but we actually received some questions earlier. So I might go into that. The first one's actually a really good question. It's probably the reason why we even start a program like this. And I'd advise if the person's there is to actually give some comments back, and then we can make it maybe a two-way discussion. So I'll read the question. Respected Bhante, as a novice to the practice, how can one sell the concept of mindful practice to me? Why should I drop everything in my life and sit and do nothing? Those who practice tried to convince me that this is the best thing you'll ever do. To me, it is like Roger Federer saying that tennis is the best sport. Bill Gates saying IT is the best career path. Donald Trump saying politics is the best. Anyone who is successful in their field of work will tell me that theirs is the best thing to do. But for me, what I currently do is what brings me happiness. I don't like much sport or IT or politics, so they mean nothing to me. I can't even imagine the concept that these things will bring me happiness no matter how hard I try. So how do I determine for myself that mindfulness practice is something that I have to do? That it is worth taking time off my work, friends and family to do it. That I'll get more happiness in life because of doing this and nothing else. Remembering that I am someone who currently is satisfied with the life that I have built for myself, and I can see people who are practitioners whose happiness levels are nowhere near mine. Basically, I need someone to sell me the concept of mindfulness. Thank you and much merit for this program.
Yeah, so someone has to do some marketing now. So mindful marketing. So basically, actually, as I said at the beginning, the mindfulness practice might not immediately give you a lot of happiness. because now there are various aspects we need to think of when we consider mindfulness. So sitting is actually one side of it. It is not just the whole practice, but sitting is simply one way of developing mindfulness. And say walking is another way of developing mindfulness. And there are various other day-to-day activities, daily activities that also you can, one can use to develop mindfulness. So you don't need to stop everything and develop mindfulness, but rather while doing various other activities, those activities can be done mindfully. So one statement in this question has to be changed, sort of clarified. That is, I mean, it is mentioning that why I do need to stop everything and practice mindfulness. It is not expected. Actually, it is not that you are completely going out of the whole world and then practice mindfulness. Rather, while being the way it is, you can just be awake. You can just be mindful. I'll simply give you an example. Suppose you are driving. So while driving, you can do various other things. Say, for example, you can listen to music. You can have a phone conference call or whatever phone conversation while driving. At the same time, there may be other passengers, other commuters, other friends with you, and you can have a discussion. But the main task is driving. So instead of stopping driving, can you be mindful and do the driving? So this is something possible. So we are, rather than doing various other activities and scatter your communication, scatter your sort of concentration. So how can you fully, wholeheartedly get involved or be aware of the present activity that the body is doing? So doing one thing and that done well. So sometimes we think we are fairly smart, so therefore we can handle so many things at a time. So therefore think that the smarter people can do multitasking. But you know, multitasking has found in a way harmful to the brain, because nothing is well registered in the mind or nothing is well focused in the brain. So therefore nothing is done well. But on the other hand, if one will attentively do a certain task, if he's sort of considering one task at a time, and that is done wholeheartedly with full attention, so that can be done well when compared to sort of a scattered attention. So therefore, while driving, you can be mindful. Say, while listening to someone, still you can be mindful. Rather than you imagining what I am going to tell him next, or rather than you are imagining on something else, if you can simply listen when someone else is talking. Say, for example, you are having a family and your wife is telling something to you, or your husband is telling something to you. On this situation, if the other party understands that you are not listening, then, I mean, the other party actually loses the interest of talking, loses the interest of conversation, because he or she recognizes, so you are not properly listening. So can you be a good listener? So if you want to be a good listener, you have to mindfully listen. So this is an activity which you can do mindfully. Suppose you are reading a book. So sometimes what happens is, suppose you are reading a couple of sentences, maybe a passage, paragraph, and then you are drifted to something else. You are imagining, you are thinking what's going to do in the office, what's going to happen tomorrow. Likewise, you are imagining. So spend, say, a couple of minutes or 5 minutes, 10 minutes. Again, you bring your attention to the book. Another passage now being read. Again, your mind being shifted to something else. Again, you are dreaming, you are thinking, lot of proliferation going on. And after some time, again, you bring your attention to the book. Do you think that you can understand the content of the book well? Do you think that you can really comprehend the message even or read mentioned in the book? Not. Because your attention being sort of disturbed in between. You couldn't maintain an unbroken attention, kind of continuity of attention, because time to time you get distracted. But if you are fairly mindful of what you are doing, suppose now you are reading a book, if you can properly read that book with full awareness, wholeheartedly, then actually you can read it very quickly. Then another person who did the way I explained, unmindful reading. Now if you can do this mindful reading, then you can sort of understand the content very easily, and even you can quickly finish the book. So likewise, when you are paying attention, when you are doing the activity wholeheartedly, you are doing the activity mindfully, then actually you can understand there are a lot of side benefits to this mindful practice. So therefore, you don't need to completely stop everything and try to be mindful. Rather, can you incorporate mindfulness to what you are currently doing? So that is what we started today's session. We were sitting. So this sitting posture is something we can be mindful. So the body is sitting. So we are sort of soaking our attention, the awareness to the body, so that we can understand the whole body, understand what's going on in the body. So this is something that we can incorporate to various other postures as well. Suppose you are waiting for a bus, and rather than thinking, imagining, blaming, and talking to others, can you understand now I am standing? So how the body pressure being spread? Where are the most prominent sensation? What are the eyes can see? What is the ears can hear? So likewise, if you can simply ground yourself, earth yourself, then it is kind of a awakening. Because otherwise, all these proliferation going on in the mind takes you for a ride. So you become a poor victim of all this thinking going on in the mind. So rather than being a victim of this continuous thinking, continuous proliferation, is it possible just for you to be aware what is happening right now? Coming back to this present moment. So this is a kind of a eye-opening in our life. Because as I said, constantly our mind being drifted, our attention being drifted from past to the future, again from future to the past, again from past to the future. So likewise, we are jumping from these two extremes. So this mindfulness practice helps us to sort of come out of this vicious cycle and to sort of log into this present moment. So now only we are living. Now only we can understand. Now only we are experiencing the present moment. So this is a kind of an eye-opening. So this eye-opening can be further broadened, further enhanced. So that there are various techniques Buddha has mentioned to enhance that opening. So this is actually the beginning. So this opening is actually the beginning. Now this opening has to be further enhanced. If you are able to be mindful just a couple of seconds, now you have to try to be mindful for a couple of minutes. Then say if you are able to be mindful for say 10 minutes, try to be mindful for 20 minutes, try to be mindful for 30 minutes. So likewise, if we are enhancing this mindful period, then you can understand the benefits. So therefore, if you want to experience the benefit, you have to practice. So there may be various books written on mindfulness. You can read them, try to convince yourself. But if you want to really taste it, you have to be mindful, and that practice has to be enhanced. And then you can understand, okay, there is something here. There is something going on here. Rather than simply allowing the mind to daydream, rather than simply allowing the mind to take me for a ride, can I penetrate this thinking and be awake onto the present moment? So this is something we have to encourage. So therefore, as I said, it is difficult in a way to market mindfulness, to sell mindfulness. I mean, we can invite you to come and see. So that's what Buddha's Dhamma mentioned, ehi pasiko, pacchattang ventabbo vinyuhi. So basically, this mindfulness practice invites you to come and see. Put it into practice and see for yourself. Someone else can't be mindful for yourself. You yourself have to be mindful for you. Say, for example, if you want to say weed your garden, then you can give some money to someone, to a laborer, and you can get it done. But you can't do it with your mind. You can't rent it for some another third party. So I'll give so much, so many dollars. Please purify this mind and give it back to me. You can't do such kind of bargaining or that kind of transaction. You can't do. Rather, you yourself have to practice. You yourself have to be mindful. Then the benefits are directly to you, not to the others. I mean, others also get benefited. But the most fringe benefits, most important benefits are to you. So therefore, I mean, having doubts is all right. But if you can still, daily, rather than thinking so much of things, rather than thinking I have to stop everything and be mindful, can you just ground yourself time to time? Can you earth yourself time to time? Rather than in a dream, can you come out of the dream time to time? So this is the kind of an opening, and I encourage that kind of a approach towards mindfulness.
Thank you, Bhante. We have two more questions that have come. These are related to practice. First question. As I practice mindfulness through sitting, my concentration moves very quickly to a state of nothing, where I cannot feel my body and I cannot feel my breath. At this point, I get scared, and so I forcefully come out of my meditation. Can you please provide some guidance on what I should do here? Is this a normal stage of concentration, and how should I proceed from here?
Chatu, can you repeat the question? I couldn't hear because I had some disturbance in the internet. So okay. Could you repeat the question?
Yes, okay. As I practice mindfulness through sitting, my concentration moves very quickly to a state of nothing, where I cannot feel my body and I cannot feel my breath. At this point, I get scared, and so I forcefully come out of my meditation. Can you please provide some guidance on what I should do here? Is this a normal stage of concentration, and how should I proceed from here?
Yeah, actually, in order to give an answer, I need more information. Because so if this yogi or this practitioner is his or her practice for several years, then I have to direct you in one way. But if this is your first experience, you are simply occasionally you do practice, and this is the first experience you come across, then I have to give another answer. So likewise, therefore, I need more history of this person in order to give the proper answer. Do you know who has written the question?
Bhante, it's anonymous. Hold on, I'll just check. Pretty sure it is. Yeah, so I'd invite the person, if they're here, to actually give some clarification to Bhante.
Yeah. So probably the person who has written the question can raise the hand so that Chamila can recognize who is the person. You know that there is in the participant list, there is a facility to raise the hand, because otherwise she can't unmute the mic. So I'll just give you a sort of a general answer. Suppose you are simply doing Anapanasati, breathing meditation. On such situation, say for example, you are being mindful about in-breath, mindful about out-breath. So likewise, you are trying to be mindful about breathing. So while doing that, so the breath can become subtler and subtler. And ultimately the breath can completely disappear. And then even the body almost like disappeared, or almost like you can't feel it. So then actually you can maintain this tranquil position for a while. Because once your mindfulness regains, once your mindfulness become more and more refined, again the breath can appear. Again the bodily feelings can appear. Because you know, the being mindful with gross sensation is easier than being mindful of refined sensations. So when this variation to a subtle can't actually give us a clear picture what's going on. So our mindfulness is not that refined, not that clearly comprehending the situation. So, but as we continue our practice, so the sort of the sharpness of mindfulness further improves. As a result, so we might be able to recognize again what is going on, whether it is in breath, whether it is out breath, or whether it is just a sensation, we would be able to recognize. So therefore, at this time, you simply have to continue your practice. Keep your attention where it was. Suppose you were maintaining your attention at the nostril, you simply just maintain your attention at that place. Don't shift it to any other place. Because as I said, the breath can reappear. The sensations of the body can reappear. So this is actually an answer for someone who is simply started his practice and is going through Anapanasati. And this may be the sort of the first or the new experience that he is going through. But on the other hand, suppose you are sort of a seasoned practitioner, you are doing several years of practice, and you suppose you have done Anapanasati or rising and falling, and once rising and falling disappeared, you are able to be aware of various sensations. Anapanasati, once Anapanasati disappeared, you were able to experience various sensations throughout the body, various feelings throughout the body. So likewise, you are continuing your practice from Kayanupassana. Again, then you are shifting, you are progressing towards Vedananupassana. Probably you can even start to watch the mind. So you are now sort of progressing in your practice. While you are progressing in this practice, probably there are situations where everything very much like disappeared, everything like ceased. On such situation, actually, you simply have to check whether you can maintain that kind of awareness. Being aware with an object is one aspect. Being aware without an object is another aspect. So this is actually in a way a kind of an advanced yogi, where he has practiced to some extent, and at that situation you can't introduce another object, rather you let the mind to be free from objects. without attaching to anything. Therefore, I have to check really what is really going on with this yogi in order to give a definite answer. So that's why I have given both answers. So depending on your situation, you have to apply.
Bhante, so this is the last question we have. Venerable Bhante, when I start to do sitting practice and settle down and focus on my body, I can feel the posture. Also, if I focus on, I can feel the breath as well as rising and falling of the chest. For a beginner, what is the simplest and easiest sensation to start the practice?
So, Chatu, can you a little bit repeat it again?
Okay. Venerable Bhante, when I start to do sitting practice and settle down and focus on my body, I can feel the posture. Also, if I focus, I can feel the breath as well as rising and falling of the chest. For a beginner, what is the simplest and easiest sensation to start the practice?
Yeah, so actually, if you can really clearly feel rising and falling, that would be much easier. Because this rising and falling practice is quite straightforward, and in a way it is fairly gross sensation, and you can simply keep your attention at the abdomen, and when rising, just be aware of the complete cycle of rising, how it is slowly begins, how this is going to improve, and then ultimately going to disappear. There's a slight resting period. And then the coming back, the falling cycle begins. Slowly you feel relaxing. Now the abdomen comes back and you feel relaxed, more comfortable. And ultimately that also disappears. And after a while, you can feel another kind of a resting period. And then the next cycle, next rising cycle begins. How it is slowly beginning, how you feel various sensations like movement, stiffness, and ultimately at the end, it go and stop. And you feel kind of a little tense there, kind of a little stiffness there. And you try to sort of completely be aware of this rising and falling. So this rising and falling is one of the easiest sort of doorway to improve mindfulness. So again and again, we are allowing the body to go through this natural process, and we are keeping our attention to each and every rising and falling, each and every rising and falling. So this actually will refine your mindfulness. So at the beginning, it appears like a single rising and single falling. But later, you can even recognize there could be several risings and several fallings. So these are the way, these are the indications that your mindfulness is now sharpening. So therefore, I recommend if you can feel various sensations, in order to refine further, probably you can select rising and falling as the most easiest activity in order to further improve.
But then we've received another question. It came through as a message. So it says, cleaning our body, they say that cleaning our body by washing, the same thing happens to our mind when we focus on one thing. Is this correct, Bhante?
So if I get the question correctly, what he is or she is asking is cleaning our body.
I'll maybe reword it a bit. So it's like a comparison. So it says you can clean your body by washing it.
Yes.
And then they say they sort of draw the comparison to your mind, and you focus on one thing, that is some sort of purification, I guess. That's what the question is.
Yeah, actually, just focusing onto one thing, we can't say that you can completely purify the mind. So this is actually one aspect of meditation where you are focusing onto one object rather than sort of allowing the mind to scatter and distract to various things. So you select one wholesome object, sort of a neutral object, sort of a pure object, and again you are applying your mind to that. And in a way, that is one aspect of purification. That is sometimes called as Chitta Visuddhi. You know, there are various stages of purification Buddha has mentioned. And if I just use some theoretical background. So this is actually the Chitta Visuddhi. You are maintaining your attention, maintaining your mind only to a single object. So you are developing concentration, you are developing collectedness, but it is not the complete purification. So you have to continue even though mind was there temporarily onto this object, so once we have removed our effort, again mind will go and get polluted. Again mind will get on to its own past habits, and again it gets distracted. So therefore you can't say it is the complete purification, but a very temporary situation. So there are actually, if one needs to completely purify, then one has to further develop the wisdom. So the wisdom is the one actually completely purifying the mind. So that is where beautifully mentioned in Sutta Nipata. So the mindfulness actually in a way blocks the defilements, and the wisdom actually cut through them. It's very much like, suppose if one is sort of harvesting, the one can collect the paddy and then using the knife one can cut it off. Likewise, the concentration, the mindfulness help us to check the defilements, and the wisdom help us to uproot them. So therefore, ultimately one can say the mindfulness, wisdom, concentration, all these things actually help. They are doing a collective job, and just keeping the mind on a single object is, one can't say it is the complete purification.
That's the last question we have. We've gone a little bit over time. Is there any more questions? If there isn't, I might pass back to Aruna for wrap up or conclusion.